This is the Fighting the Good Fight podcast, defending taxpayers and solving their tax problems with your host, Patricia Gentile. Patricia Gentile is a taxpayer defense attorney, CPA, the founder of New England Tax Relief, and Patricia L. Gentile Coaching. With 40 years of IRS expertise and experience, she has successfully defended and resolved difficult IRS situations for hundreds of taxpayers. Patricia coaches tax professionals to confidently identify their client's IRS problem and create a successful resolution plan for them. As a fierce advocate, a creative strategist, and solution finder, fighting the good fight with Patricia Gentile is both her passion and purpose.
Welcome to another episode of the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. I'm your host, Patricia Gentile. Today, I want to speak about an IRS enforcement tool that I believe taxpayers and tax professionals alike will be seeing more frequently now, and it is called third-party contacts. However, before I get into this topic, I want to provide you with some background as to where the IRS is now regarding tax law enforcement. First, the problems with the IRS because of COVID are now in the rearview mirror. The backlog of unprocessed returns has been eliminated. Phone calls are being answered at pre-pandemic levels. Audits and collections have resumed, whereas in January of 2024, the IRS began mailing again their full range of collection notices. They instituted a comprehensive non-filer notice program and began field audits and collection. The COVID fraud investigations for the PPP and EIDL SBA loans, along with the ERC claims, are in full swing. So an increase in IRS enforcement will mean an increase in third-party contacts. The Internal Revenue Code defines third-party contact as, one, a communication initiated by an IRS employee. Examples of that would be an auditor, a revenue officer, or a letter generated from IRS ACS, which stands for Automated Collection System. Number two, made with a person other than the taxpayer. So this third-party contact, the second part of this definition, is that it's made with a person other than the taxpayer. Examples would be financial institutions, employer, employees, business associates, customers, clients, co-workers, relatives, friends, or neighbors. Number three in this definition of third-party contact is that it's made in connection with an exam or collection matter. For example, in a routine audit, the contact is intended to ascertain income, whereas in a collection matter, the contact is to locate income and assets. Number four, the third-party contact in this definition discloses the taxpayer's identity. And number five, the association of the IRS employee with the taxpayer, such as the auditor, their association with the taxpayers, they're the auditor, or they're the revenue officer. So how does the IRS discover potential third-party contacts? The Internal Revenue Code provides broad authority, which is, in my opinion, extremely broad authority, in the name of enforcing the tax law to obtain first public information and then to gather information not readily available from public databases. So this is to me, an extremely broad authority to discover potential third-party contacts. For example, one of the first steps the IRS takes in an audit scenario is to obtain what is known as a custom comprehensive report of the taxpayer. This is essentially a background report produced by any number of private businesses and sold to subscribers with just the taxpayer's name, Social Security number, and known address. The report provides at least every type of publicly known information, such as, you know, verification of the current physical address, the age, date of birth on the taxpayer, etc. Legal history showing criminal records or bankruptcy filing, even if you're on the sexual offender list. Licenses and permits, your driver's license, pilot's license, hunting and fishing license, or if you have a concealed weapon permit. Vehicle registrations of every kind of vehicle. Voter registration information, whether there's liens or judgments against the taxpayer. Real estate owned or owned currently or in the past. I've read that there's a phone number analysis done in this comprehensive report that is produced by querying nearly 100 billion phone numbers, including unlisted and unpublished landlines and unlisted cell phone numbers, and information on the taxpayer's current employer, the people who work with him or her, non-business associates, relatives, and neighbors. And this is, once again, public information. An example, though, of gathering information not readily available from public databases would be to merely inquire after and concerning all persons who may be liable to pay any tax. What does that mean? That means that this is saying that there is no requirement that a person subject to an inquiry actually owe a tax. So this is what they're allowed, the IRS, in broad authority to discover potential third-party contacts. So what do you need to know to limit and prevent the IRS third-party contacts? First, if you are a taxpayer who is currently being audited, receiving IRS collection notices for unpaid balances, or has unfiled prior year's tax returns, I highly recommend retaining a tax resolution professional, an enrolled agent, a CPA, or a tax attorney to represent you before the IRS. Representing yourself in these types of IRS matters is very overwhelming and can be confusing and intimidating. And you would like to have a representative that concentrates in tax resolution and taxpayer defense, who knows the workings of audits and collection matters with the IRS and can represent you properly and literally safeguard your taxpayers' rights. What else do you need to know to limit and prevent IRS third-party contacts? If the taxpayer is unwilling or unable to provide the information, the IRS will contact third parties. Unwilling is obvious. Unable, examples of the taxpayer being unable to provide the information is just consider all the natural disasters that we have had throughout the United States in these past 6 months. There are a lot of records that have been lost. And therefore, to reconstruct such records when you're also trying to reconstruct your life as it's currently stands after being in such disasters. At that point, if you're unable, the IRS will contact third parties, such as what I mentioned before, financial institutions, to get bank records, bank statements, credit card companies, maybe broker accounts from your brokerage firm, information, employment records, even such as your form W-2. Right now it is tax season, and there is an extension of time that the IRS has granted taxpayers in these natural disaster communities until October of this year to even have to file. So please, as a side note here, look that up on the IRS.gov website regarding natural disaster areas and what the IRS is allowing you to do and extending the time to file all types of returns, not just the individual income tax returns, your business returns as a business owner, your payroll tax returns as an employer, et cetera. Please check that out. But however, the IRS will contact third parties only if it cannot get the information it needs from the taxpayer. The IRS cannot contact third parties to harass, oppress, or abuse any person. That is codified. Harass, oppress, or abuse any person is direct language out of the Internal Revenue Code regarding IRS's authority to contact third parties. Another need to know to limit and prevent IRS third-party contacts is that the IRS must notify the taxpayer of its intent to contact third party. There are IRS letters, LT40, and that's from ACS, and letter 3164, which comes from the field employees, i.e. the auditor or revenue officer. Responding to these letters is not strictly required. However, I would highly recommend that your power of attorney representative, or if you're representing yourself, respond in a letter to these letters, the letter notifying the taxpayer of the IRS's intent to contact third parties. They're required to contact the power of attorney initially. However, if you do not have that power of attorney, you want to respond in the letter that, number one, you understand the duty to provide relevant information. Number two, that you will provide information that is relevant or material to the correctedness of the return. And I think I just had a grammatical error there. The correctness of the return. So let me state that again. That secondly, in your response letter to the notice of IRS's notice of intent to contact third party, you will provide information that is relevant or material to the correctness of the return. Number three, that you expect information request by the IRS to be made in writing to either yourself, if you're representing yourself, or the power of attorney in what is called the first instance before going to any third parties. And once again, as I mentioned a moment ago, that the IRS is required to contact the power of attorney in the first instance. The taxpayer does not authorize the IRS to make third-party contacts. You actually want to state that in your response, that you do not authorize the IRS to make third-party contacts, and contacting third parties will have a negative impact on your business, your personal affairs, and will be regarded as conduct, the natural consequence of which is to harass, oppress, or abuse. I find that actually responding to these letters of intent to contact third parties by the IRS, very important for the record, to have on the written record of your case, whether it's an audit case or a collection matter, that this is how you see the conduct of both yourself and the IRS during this pending matter. Number three, about needing to know what you need to know to limit and prevent IRS third-party contacts, is finding out who the IRS contacted. The IRS must provide a list of all persons contacted in a request. The IRS must fill out Form 12175 for each third party contacted. And therefore, you must request in a writing that the IRS provide the list of all persons they contacted, i.e., all the forms 12175. This list can only be requested every 90 days while your audit or collection case is pending. Lastly, an administrative summons may be issued directly to the taxpayer or to a third-party contact if both the taxpayer and their power of attorney are intentionally uncooperative, or two, if the power of attorney argues that information sought by the IRS is privileged or irrelevant, or three, that the IRS employee has received the information. And an example of that is under audits. There was a time, and I don't know if this is still going on because I haven't had this request of any of the taxpayers that I'm representing in an audit, but there was a time that the IRS auditors were requiring that they receive a backup flash drive of the taxpayer's QuickBooks data. And there we went ahead and supplied the same information in hard copy. So I would always, and I still will always, refuse to present to the IRS to give them, the auditor, the backup flash drive of the taxpayer's QuickBooks, and instead supply that same information in hard copy. There isn't any reason to give them a backup flash drive. And what I know of almost all taxpayers that use QuickBooks for their accounting records, QuickBooks goes back several years in data, several tax years. Unless you are somebody who closes your QuickBooks every year and opens up a new company, not a new company. You just have to open a new QuickBooks file with kind of like a change in the name every tax year, so that when you do back up on some type of hard drive or flash drive, etc., it's only that particular one tax year for that company. I did not like the IRS having access to prior years data, that even though those prior years are not being audited, that was just, in my opinion, too much information. At that point, when the administrative summons is issued directly to the taxpayer or a third party contact, I highly recommend that you contact a tax attorney at this point, and not any other type of attorney. We're not talking about your real estate attorney, your business attorney, your relative, a neighbor, a friend who's an attorney. Because if you are, as a taxpayer, objecting to the summons must be enforced by the court. So if the IRS wants to enforce now the summons, they're going to go to court, and you're going to need to be represented by a tax attorney. If a third party contact if a third party contact receives a summons, the taxpayer gets notice that the third party contact has been summoned and has an opportunity to file in United States District Court seeking to quash the summons that's been sent to the third party contact as well. So this is where, when an administrative summons is issued directly to the taxpayer or a third party contact, you need to actually contact a tax attorney and discuss what type of actions, whether you as the taxpayer are going to file the petition in U.S. District Court seeking to quash the summons to a third party contact, or if you have your own objection and the IRS wants to bring you into court to enforce the summons. So the moral of the story here is to prevent third-party summons. When you are doing the job of providing to the auditor and the revenue officer information that supports the accuracy of the tax return or the collectability of the tax liability, you really are doing the work to prevent a third-party summons or a summons to the taxpayer as well. Because like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I believe that taxpayers and tax professionals alike will be seeing more frequently now these third-party contact intent notices from the IRS that they intend to make third-party contacts in your particular case, simply from the fact that there's an increase in IRS enforcement, and that will mean an increase in third-party contacts. This is Patricia Gentile, and we hope you're enjoying the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. Make sure you don't miss a moment by simply subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are also excited to announce that the Fighting the Good Fight podcast is now available on YouTube. Just search Fighting the Good Fight podcast with Patricia Gentile, and while you're there, give us a like. The Fighting the Good Fight podcast is a Park City Productions presentation. Learn more at Park City Productions 06604 on Facebook or Instagram. I'm Patricia Gentile, and we'll see you next time.